preventing pain, fear, and suffering of animals through nationwide education and awareness from all across the globe. This is Animal Radio Network.
And our special guest this week, Dr. Stanley Corinne.
I always love it when he's on. I love to hear what he has to say.
This is his second time. And he's going to tell us whether or not he believes animals think and feel. Today on Animal Radio, we will prove beyond a doubt that we share this earth with many sentient beings.
If I told you that for 400 years, Western culture has been under the influence of a dark and powerful spell, a spell woven of bad science and incorrect assumptions, a spell that has cast animals in a dungeon of misery and horrible abuse, what would you think? Since childhood, our minds have been programmed to label, separate, and classify the world of animals. And those labels have come in large part from the age of reason. An age that makes all who love animals shudder. For although it took place in the 17th century, the effects of the thinking of the men of that time toward animals still influences 21st century thought and action, especially the work of Catholic philosopher René Descartes. Descartes maintained that because there was no empirical evidence that animals could think, feel, or communicate, they did not adhere to his basic philosophical belief, I think, therefore, I am. Furthermore, he believed that as soulless machines, animals were not worthy of ethical treatment, and any appearance of suffering was merely an illusion since animals are not really alive. Although Descartes is the poster boy for this type of thinking and behavior toward animals, the focus of man as a part of the chain of being, just below God and the angels and far above the animals, was established as far back as Aristotle and Plato. One reason it's believed that the Cartesian philosophy gained such a foothold in the European psyche was that it gave dignity to the human as a free-willed thinking being. It also gave those humans prone to a need for superiority over other creatures an academic, philosophical, and religious umbrella under which to do whatever they wished with animals. The results of Descartes' theory had long-range and tragic effects on the animal realm, effects we still see today, especially in the torturous containment and abuse of pigs, sheep, lambs, chickens, and cows by the corporations who run factory farms, as well as the unnecessary use of lab animals by some research scientists and corporations, including some major pet food companies. The 20th century's most noted philosopher, Jacques Derrida, wrote, "When it comes to the relation to the animal, this Cartesian legacy determines all of modernity." Fortunately, scientific studies from the 19th century on, and especially in the last few decades, have proved that yes, indeed, animals do have thoughts, feelings, emotions, and even their own languages. Elephants communicate through sound frequencies so low the human ear cannot detect them. Rats chirp in laughter, although at a register too high for the human ear to detect. Squirrels and gophers use ultrasound to alert their companions to potential danger. Mother penguins recognize the sound of their babies, even after months of separation. While each whale has its own unique voice print and even uses multisyllable words to communicate with its pod. Since science, common sense, and analytical observation have disproved Descartes' incorrect assumptions about animals, continuing to subject them to the tortures of the factory farm and unnecessary product testing requires a serious ethical questioning of any person or corporation who condones the use of animals in this way. To avoid, ignore, and remain uninformed regarding this issue damages the interconnected web of life and takes a profoundly negative toll on the human psyche. Thanks to modern science and study, we don't need a magic wand to break this cruel 400-year-old spell. And if you're looking for a philosophy toward animals, consider the words of Black Elk. All things are our relatives. What we do to everything, we do to ourselves. All is one.
Dr. Jonathan Balcom.
Hi, is that Hal?
Yes, it is. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon to you.
We're talking today about feelings and emotions that animals feel, and I guess that other half that doesn't believe that animals have sentient feelings.
Yeah, there's still quite a lot of scientists who would question that animals, well, not many scientists. The numbers are dwindling, but there are some scientists who question whether animals have feelings. But most now accept that animals have a broad range of emotions, including pleasures.
Are they conscious of it?
No question that animals are conscious of their feelings, certainly the vertebrate animals. And I give a lot of examples in my book that reinforce that notion. You know, anyone who's lived with a dog or a cat and has rubbed their belly or tickled their chin will have witnessed the expression of pleasure in another conscious being.
Uh-huh. Sure. So, okay, why is it so hard for that other half to grasp this? What are they hiding from?
Well, it's a long-standing tradition in science that there's a reluctance to do what's called anthropomorphism, you know, to interpret animals in human terms. And sometimes anthropomorphism is out of line. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the weight of evidence now about what animals are capable of doing based on rigorous studies as well as piles and piles of anecdotes and observations from scientists and from lay people is just so overwhelming that it really has become broadly accepted now in science that animals are emotional beings with a rich landscape of emotional experience. Let me tell you about hippos in African freshwater springs.
Okay.
They go to, it's like going to the spa. They go into these nice fresh cool springs in a hot day, mm-hmm. which is most days in Kenya,
mm-hmm.
and they splay their legs, spread their toes apart, open their mouths, and fishes, keeping to their schedule, come along and nibble away at their skin, removing parasites, sloughing skin, and such. The fish get a little meal, and the hippos cooperate and show every indication of thoroughly enjoying it. They sometimes actually fall asleep, but it is quite analogous to us going to the spa, except that they do it more often than mm-hmm. we do.
So when we look down at our cats or our dogs, and for instance, I look at my cat, and I think it's smiling. Is it?
Well, you know, how do you read a smile on a cat? You know, that's one of the challenges of interpreting animal behavior. They express themselves differently than we do. And so it helps to try and put ourselves in their position. And keep in mind that a cat reads a cat better than we do.
Sure.
And a dog, similarly with another dog. But dogs are helpful because they're very expressive, and we can quickly learn to know their behaviors. For instance, playing dogs actually do have something of a smile. It's a very relaxed face. The corners of the lips can be sometimes turned up. This may actually be a result of thousands of years of coexisting with humans, and they've learned to manipulate us and to communicate with us in ways that we get it, we understand, because we're smilers as well. Mm-hmm. They also will, the way they'll go into a play bow, where they'll put their front forelegs down on the ground with their butt end in the air and the tail mm-hmm. wagging, the ears alert, the teeth are covered by the lips. There's a number of ways that animals signal an intention that they're friendly, that they want to play, and it's not an aggressive encounter.
What about birds that fly south for the winter? Is it just a matter of survival, or is it like the humankind where you take a trip, the best part is the actual drive, the getting there, the road trip to the destination?
And, of course, going to Florida in the winter is...
Yeah,
is,
do know. They enjoy it, or is it just survival?
Well, if you've seen the film Winged Migration, which is a splendid film visually, but nonetheless, you might come away with the impression that it's all hard work and earnest mm-hmm. struggle for survival every waking moment of the day. As I explain in Pleasurable Kingdom, there are numbers of examples of birds engaging in flight-related behavior that appears to be joie de vivre, pleasure-based. They're not trying to find food. They're simply enjoying the feeling of being in the air, and often it's interactive. Sometimes they're just doing it by themselves. Maybe, you know, was it Jonathan Bach or someone, Richard Bach, who wrote Jonathan Livingston Seagull uh-huh. about the gull who was experimenting with flight? I think he was onto something, albeit 30 years ago.
Lost on a painted sky.
Uh-huh.
Coco is a gorilla at the Gorilla Foundation in California. Coco, she's about probably late 20s, maybe 30 now, years old. And she many times with her teachers, her human teachers, has shown a sense of humor. One prime example that I relate in my book is when the teacher held up a white towel and was interested in teaching and seeing how Coco could understand the concept of colors. Incidentally, Coco knows American Sign Language and can sign close mm-hmm. to 1,000 words. Quite an impressive vocabulary in its own right. Coco, when seeing the white towel, signed red. And the teacher said, "Coco, what color is the towel?" And Coco again signed red, and there was a grin starting to creep across Coco's face. And the teacher was getting a little bit frustrated and said, "Coco, what color towel?" And Coco again signed red and then reached out and plucked off a piece of red lint from the towel and held it up grinning to the trainer, to the teacher.
Ooh.
So pretty impressive example of sophisticated humor. And Coco knew not to repeat the same joke with the same teacher, but did repeat it with one or two others, suggesting a sort of a sense that, well, once the joke's out, the laugh's over.
Yeah, it's only funny the first time.
Yes.
Well, if you like what we're talking about today, Pleasurable Kingdom, Animals and the Nature of Feeling Good, we'll give away 10 copies right now at 1-866-405-8405. Dr. Balcom, thanks for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
It's no doubt to me that animals feel. I've always thought that my whole life. They have emotions. If you live with one, you know that, right?
Exactly. If you have a close bond with your animal, you know that they think and feel. They can pick up on our emotions when we're sad, when we're happy, and there's no doubt in my mind.
Yet they're still considered property in all states, not guardians yet, which is interesting. It makes you think a little bit. Anyway, there's that contingent that just doesn't believes that they're biological machines. And today we're going to prove beyond a doubt that they're not. They have feelings. They are sentient beings. And we also want to hear from you at 1-866-405-8405. Hi, Animal Radio.
Hey, Hal.
Hey, Annie. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
You know, we're talking about feelings.
Feelings.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Okay. I knew someone had to do this sooner or later. I knew we weren't going to get through the show without that.
Of course not.
Who's feelings?
Kitty's feelings. Feline's feelings. They don't have feelings, do they?
I was wondering, was the show today about do cats think and feel?
Yeah.
That's the question. But I know you guys already know the answer to that.
Yeah, we do.
So I'm going to think about, the scientists who run research trying to figure out if cats think or feel. And it's like, well, duh. Dogs and cats, a good percentage of them, are able to predict when the owner is on their way home.
How do they do that?
They set up the cameras at home, and, the researchers, they make it so that, the cat doesn't know, or maybe the person doesn't know. And as soon as the person would get in their car, load up their groceries, ready to go home, they're 20 minutes from home, the dog or cat will get up and wait by the door. And it was proven many, many times that a lot of dogs and cats do that. Dogs more so than cats, because we know cats like to sleep a lot.
Well, they're not going to greet you at the door either. Yeah. They're going to wait for you to come find them.
Yeah, a lot of times they do.
How's the book doing, Annie?
Oh, it's doing great. I'm having a great time with it. And
it's Cat Be Good. It's in its third edition, right?
Yeah, Cat Be Good, third edition, nice little pocket size, updated website.
And what is that website again?
Oh, my website is goodcatswearblack.com.
Very, very good. Well, thanks for calling us today.
Well, thank you.
Hi, Animal Radio. Who's this?
This is Joan Cobb. How are you?
Hi, Joan. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Where are you calling from?
I'm actually calling from Salem, Oregon, but we've only been here for like 10 months.
Salem, Oregon. Where are you listening to Animal Radio in Salem?
In my home, on the internet.
Oh, on the internet. Okay, fine. Very good. And you moved from where?
From Jacksonville, Florida.
Jackson? That's kind of a long haul.
Yes, it is.
Did you bring any animals with you?
I did. I brought my service dog, my first service dog. And since moving here, I've gotten a second service dog.
Oh, wow.
So I used two at one time. And in Florida, we never had a radio a show like this.
Oh, really?
So now it's all you guys' fault. I'll never get any more housework done since you've gone on 365.
Yes.
Oh, no.
My butt's going to laugh over the sea on both sides from listening to you guys on the internet all the time.
I guess that's good.
That's good.
So you moved with two animals. Now you have a service dog. Are you blind?
No, I'm not. I have invisible disabilities. I have... I'm like monoocular, which means I only see from one eye.
Okay.
Uh-huh. I have ocular migraines in my good eye.
Ooh.
Plus, I have two bad knees from torn meniscus, and I have osteoarthritis in both those knees.
And so what do the dogs do?
The small dog alerts me to the onset of the ocular migraines, in addition to the panic attacks and PTSD.
Okay.
The large dog retrieves dropped items. He also alerts to the panic attacks and the PTSD.
Wow.
At a later time, he'll be bracing and counterbalancing.
I can't believe, I don't think I've spoken to anyone who has two service dogs. That's amazing.
Yes.
We're going to send them some goodies, if that's okay with which.
I would love that even more.
Okay. Hold on one second, okay?
Thank you.
You know, Judy, I appreciate it when you book the big celebrities and everybody like that, but I actually have more fun when this guy comes on the show.
And who are we talking
well,
about?
Well, this is a second appearance for Stanley Coren. Is it Dr. Stanley Coren?
Yes.
I kind of thought so. Where are we calling you today?
In Vancouver.
British Columbia.
Yep.
A beautiful day there, I suspect.
This is what we call a usable day.
A usable. The book, How Dogs Think, What the World Looks Like to Them, you really prove that these animals are sentient beings that have that are intelligent. They have the same mentality as a two-year-old, a toddler. Is that correct?
Yep. Actually, that's the key to understanding what's going on inside a dog's head, is if you recognize that the average dog has a mind about equivalent to a human two-year-old. That means to say, for things like language, he can understand about 165 words, and that includes signs and signals and that sort of thing. And the super dogs have a mind which is equivalent to about 2.5-year-olds. So they can do about 250 words and signs and signals. So if you want to understand in general whether a dog is going to understand something or be able to solve a problem, then you have to ask the question, would a two and a half year old human be able to solve that kind of problem? And that also works for things like emotions. So, for example, a human two-year-old has the ability to feel all the basic emotions. So that would be things like joy and fear and anger and surprise and that sort of thing, but not the more complex social emotions like guilt and contempt and pride and that sort of thing. It takes, you know, to feel something like guilt, it takes a child maybe 3.5-4 years of age. And I teach university, and, you know, I deal with 18-year-olds, and I sometimes wonder whether they've developed it yet. So what that means is that, you know, your dog is not going to be able to feel things like guilt. And so, you know, when you come home and you find that your white carpet has been decorated with a yellow stain, you know, and Lassie is slinking around, you know, we interpret that as guilt, but it's not. It's fear. You see, Lassie is afraid you're going to drop a safe on her head. And what she's come to associate is, you know, you being present around a transgression, and that then usually ends painfully for her. And you can prove that. You know, if Lassie has been sort of messing up the trash and that sort of thing and being punished for it, you know, you walk into the kitchen with Lassie and you strew the trash around on the floor while Lassie watches. Now, if guilt is the problem, then, of course, she's not going to be at all bothered by this. But, in fact, she's probably going to slink around because she has learned the association that you in the same room with trash on the floor means that bad things happen to puppies.
You start out your book talking about an incident with the O.J. Simpson trial. And it's intriguing how different people think how their animals think.
Yeah, this was one of those odd things. I got a phone call from one of the teams associated with the Simpson trial. The body of Nicole Simpson Brown had been found by her family dog, an Akita by the name of Kato.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, the dog had then gone on to a neighbor's, And the neighbor noticed some blood around the paws of the dog and thought that maybe the dog had hurt itself, and was taking the dog back, and that's how they found the bodies. So some people have speculated that, you know, maybe the dog was there, maybe the dog saw who did it, and that sort of thing. So a lawyer called me and said, you know, could you come down and, you know, interview the dog? And I tried to explain to him, you know, exactly what I was talking about before. You know, we're talking about the mind of a two and a half year old, and probably one which really does not have the concept of death, and we're talking about something which had happened nearly a year before, and so on and so forth. But, you know, he started, you know, throwing money around and that sort of thing, and said, well, you know, couldn't you just come down and interview him?
Uh-huh.
And I said, you know, you mean something like, you know, forgetting, of course, that lawyers sometimes don't have a sense of humor, saying, you know, something like getting the dog to bark once for yes and twice for no. And he said, could you do that?
Well, isn't it that they choose not to talk? That's how smart they are.
Do dogs appreciate art or music?
As far as, you know, graphic arts and that sort of thing, dogs really don't pay much attention to that sort of thing. They also don't pay much attention to television, or at least most dogs don't. And that has to do with a neat part about their vision. Their eyes are really designed to catch something moving, so that, because something which moves is chaseable, and, you know, out in the wild it probably could be something which is edible. And there are studies which, for example, show that a dog will not be able to recognize his owner at about, you know, 30 or 40 yards if his owner is standing stock still, but can recognize him if he's moving at a distance of a mile. Now, what that takes in order to have really good movement perception is, you know, if you go down to the level of the retina of the eye, something moving just simply is a little flicker for each of the retinal cells. You know, the light comes on, the light goes off. So that means that dogs are very, very sensitive to flicker. And your TV screen, it basically repaints the image 60 times a second. Well, it turns out that although for human beings that gives us a nice, steady, constant-looking picture, because we can't resolve the flicker, for dogs, in fact, they do see the flicker. So what that tends to mean is the mood, you know, it looks unreal to them because it's flickering. Now, for some dogs, like some terriers, you know, the other aspects of movement can catch their attention. But for most dogs, they look at that and they say, that's not real, and they just wander off.
So does that mean the dog DVDs are all a scam?
Well, let's just put it this way. I haven't invested in them.
Okay. Finally, before we go, I have a Mastiff and I have a toy poodle. And it when they're sleeping, I notice that the toy poodle seems to twitch around and dream. I don't know if it is, but it seems that she's doing it more frequently than he is.
Well, you're a good observer.
Really? Okay.
It turns out that dogs do have dreams, and there's a little center in the brain, in a very old part of the brainstem, which actually turns off your muscles when you're dreaming, because otherwise you'd actually act out your dreams. Actually, that's turning out to be a problem, because people are living to an older age, and we are having human beings who, you know, that little center fails.
Really?
And they go flailing around and, you know, ricocheting off of furniture. Quite dangerous. We now know that dogs have dreams, and there's a little odd quirk, and the quirk is that smaller dogs have more frequent but shorter dreams.
They're running from the bigger dogs.
Well, they all dream doggy things. I mean, you know, a Rottweiler, you know, I'm sure is dreaming about, you know, chasing bad guys, and pointers are dreaming about dream pheasants and that kind of thing. The bigger dogs have a bigger interval and then longer dreams. So the small Old dogs can have a dream, let's say, every 10 or 12 minutes, and it will last only a period of, you know, 30 seconds to a minute, whereas the bigger dogs, it might be 45 minutes between dreams, but that theirs will last 4 minutes or 5 minutes in that vicinity.
Uh-huh.
And dreams are one of the reasons why we believe that dogs have consciousness, because dreams are just a conscious event. I mean, you know, in essence, it is a set of mental events which we perceive, and it has nothing to do with what's coming in through their eyes or their ears or anything else. So it's part of the evidence which we use, which says that, you know, Lassie really is conscious and thinks to a certain extent.
Bueno, you see, Judy, this is why I like Stanley Kroenke.
We've
got to
have him back. I know. I've got so many questions.
You are an amazing man and a very enlightening. We appreciate you coming on the show today. The book is called How Dogs Think, What the World Looks Like to Them, and Why They Act the Way They Do by Dr. Stanley Kroenke. We'll put a link from animalradio.com. You actually have a website, which is, I imagine, stanleykroenke.com? Yes.
www.stanleykroenke.com.
What are we going to find there?
You'll find a few little dog stories. You'll find lists of my books. You'll find some embarrassing biographical data.
Very good. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you for having me.
The Animal Minute is brought to you by Doggone It Lawn Repair and Gee Whiz for dogs, natural and organic. Doggone It Lawn Repair heals yellow spots in your lawn, while Gee Whiz prevents urine burns before they start. Available at local pet stores, grocery stores, or lawn and garden stores. To learn more, visit www.earthsbalance.com.
Dogs or cats, horse or emu, animals are people too.
Learning from others and picking up habits from friends are some very common human tendencies. And according to some recent animal psychological studies, these tendencies are also shown in chimps. A Scottish professor, Andrew Whiten, and some U.S. colleagues wanted to see if chimps would learn something new from expert chimps, then pass the new method to others in the group. They privately taught some of the high-ranking female chimps how to get food out of a complicated device. The other chimps observed their senior female's technique and were generally quick to copy, showing that they can learn skills in the absence of human direction. I'm thinking this international nature study proves the complicated monkey-see-monkey-do theory. I'm Britt Savage for Animal Radio.
Animals are people, too. Animal Radio.
You work hard to keep your lawn green, so stop chasing your dog around to prevent those yellow spots. Doggone It Lawn Repair heals lawns from dog or cat urine without reseeding or resodding. You can even prevent urine burns before they start with Gee Whiz for dogs. Both Doggone It and Gee Whiz, all natural and organic products, are available at local pet stores, grocery stores, or lawn and garden stores. To have the best lawn on the block, visit www.earthsbalance.com. That's earthsbalance.com.
The Veterinary Minute is brought to you by World's Best Cat Litter. Made from whole kernel corn, World's Best Cat Litter has superior odor control without the use of perfumes and scents, and is clumpable and scoopable. It is also truly septic safe and flushable. Ask your grocer or pet supply store for World's Best Cat Litter.
Better behaved pets through chemistry. I'm Dr. Jim Humphreys reporting for the Veterinary News Network. People with anxious pets eagerly seek out anything that might reduce the barking, howling, chewing, house soiling. Many have tried the recently introduced products containing pheromones. These are sprays and plug-ins aimed at calming anxious pets. Separation anxiety affects 15% of the nation's 74 million dogs. Separation anxiety also affects cats, although it's not as noticeable because cats tend to be less noisy and destructive when they express anxiety. Veterinarians see a lot of dogs with separation anxiety and firework and thunderstorm phobias. Anxiety is an underlying issue in a significant portion of aggression also. So just how much do these pheromone-based products help? It's debatable. Used in combination with behavior modification and on selected cases, they may have some usefulness. A disadvantage of the pheromone products is their cost. It's a little more expensive than medication in most cases. The upfront cost for the spray or diffuser ranges from $20 to $40, and refills are $15 to $20. Could pheromone therapy help your pet? It's possible. But you have to be willing to try to figure out why your pet is anxious in the first place. Few cases of anxiety-related behavior problems are successfully resolved without behavior therapy.
I'm Dr. Jim Humphreys, reporting for Animal Radio.
Your cat deserves world's best cat litter. A new breed of cat litter with a level of performance that makes it worthy of the name world's best. Made from whole kernel corn, it binds odors naturally, resulting in superior odor control without the use of perfumes. It is truly flushable, clumpable, scoopable, biodegradable, and septic safe. You just scoop it and flush it. It's ideal for use in self-cleaning litter boxes. It is also veterinarian recommended and safe for kittens of all ages. Ask for world's best cat litter at your grocery store, PetSmart, Petco, and anywhere fine pet supplies are sold.
Remember, if you get a pet this week,
spay or neuter.
And never get an animal from a breeder.
And if you get a cat,
don't declaw. We'll see you next week for more Animal Radio. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.